All right. This is the ins and outs of opening your own B&B. And I put that right there in the chat, your own B&B, a guest house, an Airbnb or a VRBO. And then last month, we even extended it to include midterm rentals. If you wanted to do some midterm stuff, we had Josh Hively on and he talked to us about his midterm. And so I also have a midterm. So hopefully we get to talk about that a little bit tonight. So I'm going to turn it over to Adam. He's going to tell us a little bit about his new gig on what he's doing currently. So that's kind of exciting. And I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about himself and what he's doing. And then we'll get started. So over to you, Adam.
Yeah. So I am a mortgage broker. I broker loans of all different shapes and sizes, but they're primarily meant for investors. So I don't do any owner-occupied any longer. I recently made the move to a brokerage called LFG, Lawrence Financial Group Lending, with a very good friend of mine. Her name's Liz, and she runs the show. And I came over with a good buddy, Steve, and I'm teaching him the ropes of brokering. And so that's been a lot of fun. But we focus on servicing the investor. So anything from hard money and short-term loans to DSCR, which is debt service coverage ratio loans, that's where we use the income and the expenses of the property to qualify the loan rather than your personal income. So it's really good for investors, especially because, if you're doing a lot of flips and your income is difficult to track, sometimes we can look at this house, we can look at the metrics, look at the market rent, and we can see that this is clearly a good deal. That's where DSCR lenders come in. Because it's like, okay, we're not concerned about you necessarily as what you look like on paper. I mean, they run your credit. You do have to have like in the mid 600s, I would say, for a credit score, but then they look at, does the income from the property cover the expenses of the property? And typically those expenses are PITIA. That's principal, interest, taxes, insurance, and association fees, if applicable. Typically, you want to be in that 120% range where the rent is 120% of the expenses. So if your mortgage payments is going to be $1,000 a month, that lender wants you to have $1,200 a month in income from that property. In addition to that, I do large commercial, large commercial, but another term I could use is full underwriting commercial. So full underwriting commercial, not a lot of people realize this, you can use on a single family home. The nice thing about that is you're closing in an LLC. It's not reporting to your personal credit. Typically the pricing's pretty good. I mean, they're not going to be 30-year loans usually in those cases. Right now,
is it normally a 20?
I got a 20-year.
Okay.
That's really interesting. It's 20-year, and right now they're rocking a 5.6% interest rate.
That's a good rate.
Yeah,
that's a good rate.
It is. Yeah. So to give you an idea, and this is something we'll have to talk about offline, but if you were to compare that to a 30-year at 7.625%, it's about $20 cheaper, depending on your loan amount, to go with a 20-year. So sometimes that's a good option if you're looking for cash flow on a property. And again, it's not reporting credits in an LLC. It's not on your personal credit. That's cool. The other thing that's really cool about that is I have some commercial lenders that will incorporate purchase and rehab into a single long-term loan. So if you're looking to buy something and you want to buy something that needs a little tender love and care and you look good on paper, so this is not really for the first time flipper, but like if you've done a few flips and you know what you're doing, then what we can do is we can finance 80% up to 80% of the purchase price of the property and then up to 90% of the rehab. So they do want you to have a little skin in the game on the rehab, but I mean, then you're, I mean, there's an interest-only period during construction where you're only paying interest. You still got to pay insurance and taxes and stuff like that. But there's no principal payments that are due during construction. After construction, whatever is left on that 240 months or 20 years, the loan is amortized over that period of time.
That's actually a pretty good deal.
Oh, it's sweet. Yeah. It's fixed. The rate's fixed for 10 years. And then there's what's called a reset where the rate adjusts, but then it's fixed for another 10 years after that. So it's not an ARM. People are like, oh, is it an ARM? No, it's not an ARM. ARM would be it's fixed for a period of time and then it changes every 6 months to a year after that. So this is it's fixed for 10 years, then resets, then it's fixed for another 10 years. So that's a really nice product. The other thing that's nice about it is you don't have to do a double close because normally you have to take down a property with hard money, fix it up, and then come back to me and do another, do a cash out refi to take down the loan that you used to take out the property originally. Anyways, so that's cool. And then, yeah, that's pretty much it. So any kind of long-term or short-term debt as it relates to investment, commercial, development, construction, you want to go build something and rent it out or use it as a short-term rental. I'm doing one right now in Hocking Hills, and it's a purchase with a rehab component. It's a great deal. It's a great deal. I think they're buying for like one in the 150, 160 range. You can put 90 grand into it and it's going to ARV in the 300 to 400s.
So, very nice. I mean,
yeah. And they're experienced. They're awesome. They're
now, what's your area that you service? We've got several folks in the audience. And so my question is, put in the chat where you are, what state you're in, because Adam, you can do anything in Ohio. Is that correct?
I can do anything in Ohio. Yeah, for sure. I've got a lot of options in Ohio. I do have many options for most of the nation. Some states have some weird rules about brokering where you have to like live in the state or you have to have a physical office in the state. Like Arizona is a no-go for me, or Nevada are two difficult states for me to lend in. But then, you know, up Florida for sure. Anywhere up and down the East Coast is fine. So Florida, hey, Damaris, give me a shout anytime.
Hey.
I'll put all my contact information in the thing. So if anybody has any questions and wants to do a deal or look at options, I'm available to chat about that. But, so about 35 states to answer your question. The most concentration of ability that I have is in Ohio, which is perfect because I can service like out of state investors, get a lot of California money and New York money, that come into Columbus because it's still one of the fastest growing markets in the nation. So, we have a lot of interest in the Columbus market.
Well, I love that.
Yeah. So that's me professionally. On a short-term rental level, I bought a short-term rental in 2019, launched it in February of 2020, because my timing's impeccable. So I was just in time for COVID. I also went into banking in 2008 to give you an idea about my timing. So that was awesome. I run it through a management company, which I absolutely love because it's hands-off.
Right.
And I don't have to do anything. And it's great. I just get a check every month. And so it works out perfectly. But that's enough about me, Kathy Benner. Let's talk about
I know.
So, let's start at the beginning. What were you doing before you even got into short-term rentals? And maybe if you even want to go back this far, how did you get into real estate investing in general? Because I know that's a really cool story.
Well, I'm going to give you the short version so we can talk more actually about the short-term property. But
yeah,
I was probably 12 years old when I told my mom that, hey, when I retire someday, I'm going to run a bed and breakfast. Now, I had no clue what a bed and breakfast was. I probably read it in a book because I was an avid reader. So I probably read it in a book somewhere. But I really didn't know what it was. But over time, of course, I did figure out kind of what it was. And so I was in corporate America. Fast forward, I got into the salon industry. And in the salon industry, I realized my big aha moment was when I realized that the owners were doing what was called a booth rent type salon, where they were renting a chair out to stylist and nail techs, you know, a nail table. And the owner of the salon then was collecting all of that. We fondly call it booth rent. It was actually just rental income from independent contractors. And they were collecting that booth rent and then paying their rent or their mortgage or, you know, depending on whether they owned or whether they were renting a space. And of course, a lot of these salons are in shopping centers where they're renting a storefront and the price can be pretty expensive. So my aha moment came when I realized that I could open my own salon now that I was in the salon industry. I didn't go into the salon industry till I was 40 years old, by the way. I was the oldest one in my class when I went to cosmetology school. So anyway, I realized that I could buy a building and have booth renters, and I could actually collect the booth rent and pay the mortgage and the taxes and insurance that go along with that, you know, the PITI you were talking about. And at the end of 20 years, if I did a 20-year note on an investment building, that in 20 years, I would have a building paid for. And so I did not have a retirement at age 40. And it was my way of developing a retirement income. And so that's how I got into purchasing real estate in general, is my first purchase. I owned my condo that I lived in, but my first investment purchase was a salon building. And so anyway, my thought process was, you know, I really couldn't afford to, you know, put something up at one of these shopping centers. I mean, by the time my money would have been gone just in hooking up the utilities. And so, you know, all the underground stuff. So I thought, well, you know, you can go into all these little cities all over the United States and go into the heart of those little towns. And oftentimes the very core of those, of all the little towns, have transferred over to commercial space. And those little houses that, you know, maybe were built in the 1800s and 1900s, all of those houses in those towns have now been turned into little bookstores and little coffee shops and little hair salons. And so that was where I shopped for a building, because I thought, I can at least afford it. It already has utilities, you know, already has the underground stuff done. So that's what I did. So in my little hometown of Canal Winchester, I drove around and I found one of those houses that was zoned commercial already, and bought it and turned it into a beauty salon. So now I know the audience is probably getting ahead of me thinking, aha, and now that's her bed and breakfast. Actually, it is not. Actually, when I did retire 20 years later from the salon industry, I turned that first commercial building into a little office building. And so now the actual Chamber of Commerce rents a space for me, and a couple of attorneys rent a space, and a couple of medical professionals rent a space. And so anyway, it's a little office building. And so I still have that first building still today, and it is still cash flowing. It is now paid for in full by my salon staff over that 20 years from my age 40 to age 60. And then I actually retired at age 60 when I thought that I wasn't going to get to retire at all. I actually ended up retiring early at age 60. I didn't wait to age 65. So that's my real estate story. And then it was at age 60 when I retired, I thought, what am I going to do with myself? Because I was used to being in that salon, you know, and having clients every hour on the hour, you know. And so I thought, what am I going to do? Watch soap operas all day? What am I going to do with myself? And that's when I went, aha, a dream recovered instead of a dream discovered. And I said, I think I want to have a bed and breakfast. So during that time of running the salon, I met Mark, and he and I bought a house together. And so I approached him and said, I want to turn a couple of rooms in our actual home, which is an 1865 house that was built right at the end of the Civil War. Yeah, if these walls could talk. And I said, I want to put a room out on Airbnb. That's how I got started. I said, I just want to toss a room out on Airbnb and see if I'm going to like it. So that's how I decided to start my bed and breakfast.
Okay. Nice. And then, now I know, cause I know a little bit about your setup. And I know that you've mentioned in the past that your living area is separated from the guest area. Was that already set up when you rented that first room?
No. Okay. No, not at all. First of all, I didn't want to put a lot of money into doing anything to the house until I knew that we were going to be okay with having strangers in our home, because that was going to be my model, was to actually run it out of my residence, because that way I could do all the flips, I could greet the guest, I could take care of the breakfast, I could do all of that. And so we just started with one room and put it out on Airbnb. We had a couple of guests. It went okay. You know, it was a little awkward start because I didn't really know what I was supposed to do. The guests really weren't expecting to be in somebody's house when they first showed up. And so they were kind of like, we're staying here. And I'm like, yeah.
What do you want for dinner?
It was one of those.
What year was this roughly?
This would have been October of 2016.
Oh man, coming up on your 6-year anniversary.
Yeah. So October of 2016. And we had a guest, we had two guests, we, you know, ended up having, you know, several times because just one room now. So we now started having guests. And one morning I wake up and I come out into the kitchen and the guest is actually in my kitchen and his head is way back in my refrigerator and he's pulling stuff out. And, you know, and at that point I was like, how much has he handled? You know, has he handled all the silverware? Has he handled all the dishes?
Did he put his finger in the mayonnaise? Yeah. Yeah.
I have no idea. And so that's, you know, and of course I was very polite and I, you know, I was like, can I help you find something? And he was like, yeah, look, he said, I'm not feeling really well. And he said, I was looking for some milk. I wanted to have a glass of milk. And I'm like, let me get that for you. So anyway, I'm going through that process. And that's when I then approached Mark and I said, boy, I said, I don't mind if I'm out there, if I can bring folks out into the dining room or into the kitchen, I said, but I really don't want them in our kitchen when I'm not there.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, you could stanchion it off and say, you know, area closed or whatever, but there are so many folks that, you know, don't believe that the rules are for them. So I thought, how can we do that? And Mark says, well, he said, I can put a door in between, you know, again, this is an old house. So we have the living room and then we had like what was considered back in the day, a parlor. And he said, I can just put a door up right there. And I'm like, yeah, but it's got this beautiful archway. So I'm like, I don't want to lose I had visions that he'd have to get out the saw and square it off and, you know, put in a door frame, you know, go to Lowe's, buy a door. And again, we've got an 1865 house with some original doors in it. And I thought, that's not going to look good.
Yeah.
And he said, no. He said, I'll just hang a door on this side of the archway. And, you know, and that, and so we had a French door. I don't even remember why we had a French door, maybe left over from one of the salons. Cause the backstory when I had a salon, I ended up with 5 salons. So I ended up with 5 paid for buildings by the time I retired. So anyway, I think it was a leftover door from a salon, but it was a glass French door. So anyhow, he hung it there and I put some curtains on it. And then we put a keyless entry lock on the door. So we can just punch in a code and come through there, but we can close that door. And what it did is it separated with just one door installation. It separated the guest area from the actual owner's suite.
Yeah.
And so now I can open the door and invite folks through if I want to, but I don't have to.
Yeah. And no fingers in the mayonnaise. So that's
good. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Fantastic.
So when you bought this house, because you said that you were living in it already.
Yeah.
You didn't buy it with the intention of doing this, right?
Because you were already living there. No, so, I was clear up to my ears in the salon industry when I bought that. We bought this in 09, and I was totally in the salon industry still, running 5 salons. And the thought of having a bed and breakfast didn't even enter my mind during that time because I was just doing, back-to-back appointments at the salon.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump around a little bit here because I know you have another property, a midterm rental. And that one you did buy with the intention of being a midterm. Is that right?
Yes, I did. Yes.
So that raises the question, like, what do you look for in a property when you're trying to do this?
Well,
set up an
for me, I always have to have a plan B. So the fact that we were already living here, as far as the short term, I was already paying the mortgage. I was already paying the insurance. I was already paying the water bill, you know, and the heat and electric and all that. And so if I had a guest, that was fine. And if I didn't have a guest, that was fine. So it took the pressure off of feeling like I had to perform and I had to have so many room nights a month and all of that. because it was just going to be kind of an extra cash flow, but it was also to give me something to do. And whenever you're doing something that is optional, it just takes the stress off when it isn't, you know, when you don't have that financial commitment. So with that in mind, when I decided that I wanted to do try a midterm, which is, for those listening, it's anything over 30 days, but less than a year. And I will start off by saying this: when you have a long-term investment property, you can rent it out for whatever the market will bear. And if you have a midterm, which is more than 30 days, less than a year, you can get about twice the rent that you would get on your long-term. And then if you have a short-term, you get about four times the rent that you would get on the long-term. And so when I started shopping for a midterm, my plan B was, could I just back up and just do a long-term renter if for some reason the midterm didn't work for me? Yeah. If for some reason I couldn't keep it filled, or or what I was buying it for, you know, because you know how the economy ebbs and flows and things come and go. And I thought, if for some reason it just doesn't work long, you know, for me to keep it rented as a midterm, I could always just put a long-term renter in there. And so when I bought this midterm, it actually came with a long-term renter in there, but we knew that she wanted to relocate, but we didn't know how soon. So we told her, just take your time. You know, you can have it as, you know, she'd been there a couple of years and you can live here as long as you'd like. And she was there about 6 months. And then she called me and was excited. And she said, okay, this is it. She said, I found the house. My kids are already in the Carolinas. I found the house I want in the Carolinas. I'm moving to the Carolinas. And she said, I'm in this, I'm giving you my notice. So I was excited because I was like, okay, now I can try this midterm thing, because that's what I wanted to do. And so then I just kind of said to her, because I'd been in her house, her furniture was wonderful. She bought it all brand new when she moved in, you know, 2 years earlier. So everything was less than 2 years old. And so I said to her, what are you going to do with your furniture? And she was like, oh, I thought about, you know, moving it and paying a moving company. But she said, I probably would be better off to just sell it and start over. And so I said, well, if you decide to do that, just, you know, keep me posted. And a couple of days went by and she sent me a text and she said, if you're still interested, I would sell it for, you know, $1,500 to $1,700 and you can have the whole house full. And she sent me a list, you know, of what that included. And I said, okay. And then by the time I went to do the walkthrough with her, the day that she was giving me the key back, she even left the pillows and the curtains and the pictures on the wall, which was not on her list. So she said, what am I going to do with that stuff? It all matches this stuff. So just you can have it all. So I'm like, okay. So that's how I got started.
Like what, if you don't mind sharing, what did you pay for all her furniture?
I ended up paying her $1,500 cash.
That's awesome. And that was couches and, or a couch and a bed and.
And a table and a washer dryer.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just a little one bedroom condo and it wasn't full of furniture. It really was just pretty darn perfect for a midterm rental. Lots of open space.
So I am curious about something, because I did think of something, but so I want to jump back to the Caraway house, guest house, Caraway guest house.
Okay.
That's the name of it, right? The Caraway guest house.
The Caraway guest house.
Where'd you come up with that name?
Oh, this is a better story. I don't know that you've heard this story. Have you heard the story?
I think I know something about it, but go ahead.
Okay. So Mark and I, we were going skiing in upper state New York. And I, of course, at the time was still, you know, working in the salon and I was a nail tech. So I was using my hand. I said, I don't want to go skiing and like break a wrist or something, because I'm totally out of business. Yeah. And he goes, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to stay at the lodge, you know, and enjoy the fire and the drinks. And I'm going to pick out a name for the guest house. And he was like, okay. He said, well, I'm going skiing. So off he goes. He comes back at lunchtime and he goes, do you have a name? And I said, yep. And I told him the name and he goes, I'm a little offended. He goes, I thought for sure that it would be like, because his last name's Vance. He said, I thought for sure it would be like the Benner Vance house or, you know, or the Vance Benner. He said, how come you're not using our names? And I said, well, Mark, I said, the Mark Vance in New England is pretty upright kind of guy. I said, he looks like he's an engineer of some sort. I Googled his address. I said, there's a beautiful boat sitting in his driveway and he's nice home. I said, it's the Mark Vance out in California that does porn. Does porn. I said, every time you put Mark Vance in the computer, all these porn sites come up. I said, I don't think that's what
you're looking for. I've seen him.
So, as soon as I discovered that, I said, okay, the house was had a 1920s flare, even though it was built in 1865. It had a 1920s flare. And we discovered that the dad built the house in 1865. The son took the house over in the 1920s, you know, the roaring 20s. And that's when Canal Winchester really bloomed. And the gentleman that lived here, the son, actually was our first bank president here in Canal Winchester. And the last name was Kramer. And we still have the Kramer edition here where he was in mortgage lending, Adam.
Yeah.
He's the one that did all of the lending for the Kramer edition. And that is how Canal Winchester actually came to be. It had the population to become its own little village. So with that in mind, I decided I wanted something with a 1920s flair. And so I love literature. I'm just recently a published author. And so I love literature.
Congratulations. Yay.
Thank you. And so I started thinking, you know, when you think of the 1920s, what do you think of? What do you think of the Great Gatsby? Well, we're not a Gatsby house. We're not, you know, the mansion on the hill, you know, like the Gatsby. If you've seen the movies, even if you haven't read the book, but Nick Carraway was the narrator of the book, The Great Gatsby. And he lived in a nice house, but it wasn't the Gatsby Mansion. So I thought, oh, well, let's play around with that name. And so we became the Carraway Guest House. Mm-hmm. And one of the deciding factors was that when you put that into the internet, if you put in Gatsby anything, you're on page, you know, 10,000, because there's so many things named after Gatsby. But when you put in Carraway, we ended up on the first page.
Yeah.
And so I became the Nick Carraway House guest house. And then I named each of, because we now have three, the whole house has four bedrooms and three of them are now guest rooms and only one for us. And so I named each of the guest rooms after a character in the book.
Cool. Here's a question. I mean, Mark pulled through with that magic door to like separate your area from the guest area.
Yes.
That wasn't an option. Or mm-hmm. if the option to separate the residents from like the guest area, if that had not been so easy, do you think you would have kept going with it? Or what do you think?
I do. But see it never occurred to me that it wouldn't be that easy because remember, Mark is the one who actually helped me with the salon buildings. And so one thing that he learned about me was that I always want to keep my options open because in the salon industry, one minute I say I need this for a nail tech and the next minute I need it for a hairstylist. And then when that girl leaves, I want a massage room. And so I'm constantly changing. And so he was doing wiring and plumbing and doors and, you know, he was constantly, you know, bringing the salon up to speed to whatever it was that I needed. And so it never occurred to me that we couldn't. I just was surprised that it was as easy as it was. Yeah. I mean, if we had to like totally drywall the whole opening over, we could have done that.
Yeah.
You know, we could have closed it off and just, we could have come and gone out of the back. But by putting the door there with the keyless entry, now I'm able to transfer in between the owner suite and the guest area quite flawlessly, you know, just by punching in my key code.
Okay. And then, okay, so you got the Carraway guest house, you do this, it seems to be working. At what point did you have to like, think like, okay, am I breaking any laws doing this? Like, is there some zoning regulation when was that a consideration?
I knew that I was from the very beginning. So the first thing when I finally decided, you know, once I was ready to retire and I decided I want to try this thing, the first thing that I did before I did anything was that I looked up the Ohio Revised Code. And my research was, can I have a bed and breakfast in my home? Now, I knew that the answer was yes, but I didn't know how it was going to be worded because I knew that there were bed and breakfast all over the state of Ohio. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we love to go to Put-in Bay, for example, and that's considered still in Ohio, even though it's out on the island. And there's a lot of you know, bed and breakfast there and guest houses there. And they're all over the state. So I knew the answer was going to be yes. I just didn't know how the answer was going to be yes.
Yeah.
And so I looked it up on the Ohio Revised Code, and the Ohio Revised Code says, if you are in a residential area, which we are, it says you have to live in the house that you're going to rent out as a guest house or, you know, a bed and breakfast, short-term rental of any kind. You have to physically live in it. And then you can have rooms up to 4 rooms, up to 16 guests, only breakfast. You can't serve dinner. So anyway, this was all spelled out right in the Ohio Revised Code. So I knew I could do it. But so then, you know, I didn't go get any approvals. I just put it out on Airbnb a couple of times to see if we were going to like it. I didn't want to spend the money and do all if we decided we didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
So I just did that to see if we're going to like it. Once I knew that we were going to be okay with having strangers in our house, and especially once Mark added the door mm-hmm. to keep the guy out of my mayonnaise, then it was time for us to then go to zoning. Well, when I went to the city, because we're in the city limits now of Canal Winchester, when I went to the city, they were like, we don't have any bed and breakfast inside the city limits. We don't know either. So they found the Ohio Revised Code, and they said, we don't have anything in our city zoning for this because nobody's asked before. And so they said, if you'll hang in there with us, we'll figure out some way to grant you an approval and see what that's going to look like from the city point of view. So if anybody else wants to do it, we're going to do it all the same. So we don't have this, you know, this Frankenstein kind of approvals across the city where somebody goes, well, I didn't have to do that. Why did you have to do that kind of thing? So they worked with me. We came up with a set of rules. You know, they decided that I wasn't commercial, but they kind of wanted me to have a fire inspection since people would be sleeping here. And they wanted me to have a health department inspection since I would be serving, you know, breakfast. And so they had some things that they kind of wanted to see. And then I was not going to get an occupancy permit because I'm not a commercial space. So they decided they were going to call it an occupancy letter instead of an occupancy permit. And so then they said, well, now that we've done all of this, they said, can you write up a little program? We're going to give you a grant to write the program on how to open any type of a guest house, Airbnb, VRBO, whatever, in Canal Winchester proper. And so I actually got a $1,000 grant to write their program for their zoning.
Awesome.
And I have my little, you know, occupancy letter framed in my parlor so that any guests that come in knows that we are approved. And that's then awesome. Once a year, we have to do our fire inspections and our health department inspections.
Cool. Very cool. Very cool. And what's it, I mean, so somebody comes, they book at the Caraway guest house. What's that like? What's it like when they show up?
Well, again, early on, our very first guest or two, and you know, if anybody in the audience has ever done this, you know what I'm talking about. I was at the door every time a car would go by. I'm like, is that them? You know, when are they going to get here? I want to welcome them and, you know, and all that. And you know, and after a while it was very time consuming because folks don't come all at the same time, you know, and sometimes people get delayed and sometimes people's flights get delayed and then they have to wait for the rental car. And then by the time they drive over, and Mark and I are travelers. So we got that, you know, we understood that because oftentimes we roll in at midnight somewhere, you know? And so sure. I thought, wow, am I going to just stay up? Cause check-in is after 3. Am I from 3 o'clock on till whenever, am I just going to be on call hanging out in the parlor waiting for these guests to arrive? And so, again, I started doing some research and I decided that I wanted to put the keyless entry on the front door as well. And so what happens is now when a guest shows up, they already have a welcome letter. So once they book, I send them a welcome letter explaining that the day of they're going to get the keyless entry code to come through the front door and they're going to get their room assignment. And then I give them a little description of, you know, I'm going to leave some snacks in the parlor for them. Basically, I'm telling them I'm going to leave the light on, you know, come whenever at your convenience, no matter how late. And so now, oftentimes, once I get my rooms flipped and I get my letter out to them, the, you know, with all of the entrance instructions, Mark and I, we go out to dinner, we'll go dancing, we'll go to the movies, we go do whatever, and we don't pay any attention what time they come or how late.
Yeah. Does each room have its own bathroom or no?
Well, again, thanks to Mark, yes, it does. Yes. Yes, it does. Because
Mark is a miracle worker.
He is, because when we travel, now we've stayed at Airbnbs, we've stayed at VRBOs, we've stayed, you know, we've traveled abroad, we've stayed at hostels, and, you know, and sometimes the bathroom is down the hall, and that's okay, and it's a shared bathroom. But in a perfect world, we love it when we have our own private bathroom. And so Mark says, I think that that's probably important, especially when they realize that they're staying at somebody's house. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to, yeah. They don't know whether we have kids or not, or whether they're going to share the bathroom with the 3-year-old. So yeah. He says, I just think it's important to have a little ensuite bathroom. And so once he added that, and what he did, for those that are listening, he took a closet, and we have a full basement, so he can do plumbing in the basement. You know, it's not finished. It's just a, you know, utility type basement. That's where our furnace and hot water heater and all the plumbing pipes are. So he can run those pipes anywhere across the basement and then just come up through a wall or up through a closet. And so what he did is he took the closet in each room and actually made a corner bathroom. Put the shower right in the corner, and then he put the commode on one side, a little pedestal sink on the other, and then he even made the wall and the door kind of an octagon shape there on the corner. And that way it hardly takes up any room space out of the room itself.
Yeah.
I lost my closet, but when folks are traveling, they really don't need a full size closet in a room that they're spending a couple nights in. So that's how we ended up adding a bathroom in each of our guest rooms.
That's cool. And then, so you've got people coming and going from on this property, then you've got your midterm rental. How do you keep it all straight? Are you using, like, what kind of software are you using to manage everything and make sure that, you know, cause are you on Airbnb and then the other sites like VRBO and stuff like that?
I am. And so early on, again, anyone that's just starting to do this early on, I decided I was going to do Airbnb and I was going to do booking.com. Those were my two. Yeah. And of course those are kind of common. And so folks that are doing those, Airbnb and booking.com have made an agreement that they will sync your calendar of those two, but there is a 15 minute or a possibly up to a 15 minute delay. And I thought, well, this is pretty cool. So I uploaded all my stuff to both of those platforms and opened up my calendar to start booking. And sure enough, that first year, we got a double booking where people booked on one platform and somebody else booked before those calendars talked to each other. And of course, Mark and I, we thought we'd had it all handled because we're thinking, what's the likelihood that somebody's going to book within that, you know?
Yeah.
And it didn't happen often, but it did happen. And of course, we were out at dinner. So I had to excuse myself from the table with all our friends. I had to find a quiet place because, you know, restaurants can get noisy. So I'm out in the hallway, back in the coat room, whatever, on the phone, trying to figure out how I'm going to get, you know, two guests in the same room and where I'm going to walk these people to, because in Ohio, the laws say that if you book somebody and you can't provide, you can't actually deliver, that you need to walk them to a like kind of property. So I was calling our local hotels here in Canal Winchester to see if they had any rooms available. And of course they did at $100 more than mine. And so I was going to have to pay the difference. And so, you know, I would have been better off to have not even been open that night because I was going to end up spending my profit on walking this guest to another hotel. Sure. And so finally, when it happened the second time is when I said, No. I don't like the stress of now worrying that we're going to double book and that I have to figure out where to put these people. So what I did then is I rolled up my sleeves and started doing my research, and I discovered there was a thing called a channel manager, which I was like, what is that? Yeah. And so at that point I found, I kind of researched two or three different channel managers, and I chose CloudBeds. There's also one called Little Hotelier. I looked at that one, and there's a couple more. Guesty, I think. Anyway, I chose CloudBeds. And once I put my information onto CloudBeds, then you can connect all your channels to the CloudBeds software. And CloudBeds actually blocks off in real time. So if Airbnb reservation comes in, CloudBeds then pushes it out to the other channels and says that room is booked. If booking.com comes in, CloudBeds picks it up and pushes it back out to Airbnb and says that room is already booked.
Is there a monthly subscription fee for that?
There is, and there's different price points. So, and I've forgotten along the way what those are, to quote all of them, but I chose the most expensive one because it comes with the channel manager and it comes with a website. So if you wanted to advertise your own website link, then you don't have to pay a commission. Whereas if you're getting bookings from Airbnb or VRBO or booking.com or Expedia or Travelocity, you're paying a commission every time a reservation comes in from one of those online booking sites. Whereas if your guest comes directly to your website, which is connected also to your channel manager, you don't pay a commission. And so when somebody contacts you directly and says, hey, I'd love to book, I can say, let me send you the link. And I send them my own personal website link. And my cost is $124 plus tax. It comes out to $130 a month.
Okay. Okay.
I've got all three of my rooms on there. And once I got the channel manager, I added more channels. I added Travelocity, Expedia, hotels.com. I'm on probably 10 different channels now.
Is there one channel? I mean, aside from, because obviously if they come directly to your website, then that's the most profit. Mm-hmm. But I mean, have you actually dug into of the services, which is the most profitable, which is the least profitable?
Believe it or not, the most profitable is Airbnb, because when you book on Airbnb and you decide your rate, Airbnb adds their fees on top of.
Yeah.
But when you're booking on booking.com and Expedia, Travelocity, all those others, their fee comes out of the booking price. Yeah. And so then, and you have to choose your poison, so to speak, because Expedia sends me more reservations than any other online booking site.
Yeah.
But they would not take my account unless I agreed to let them do a discount for some of their.
Yeah,
they call it their Genius program. And so if you're booking through their Genius program, they want to give all of their Genius users a 10% discount. And I had to agree to that to be on their channel.
Yeah.
But they make up for it in volume.
Yeah. Okay. I have a question for you that is kind of recent news that's been coming up about short-term rentals. And that is, the checkout lists. Have you seen these articles? There have been a couple articles that have been kind of criticizing short-term rentals and Airbnb in particular, because sometimes you stay in a house, you stay in this location, and in order to check out, you have to like take out the trash, and you gotta like de-linen the beds and mow the grass and feed the dog and do all this. And it's like, it's like, go grocery shopping. I like, what are you doing? I mean, why am I paying you $125 cleaning fee? Right. Has been the criticism. Do you have any thoughts on that or feelings about that?
I do. And so for the first thing that I want to say is that I wanted to keep all of my stuff pretty much the same across the board. So no matter what online site they book on, they're going to get the same deal. And so that way, you know, sometimes you say, oh, I need to get a better deal if I book on this site or a better deal on that site. And I wanted to keep mine the same across the board. And here's why. When we first started, to answer your question, when we first started, we were catering to an art studio here in town that was having on-site art classes. And I didn't want, you know, three different students, art students, sitting in the same room saying, you know, it's like the TV commercial. Well, I got it for this amount. What did you pay? I only got it for this amount. How come I had to pay, you know?
Yeah.
And because that causes hard feelings. And so ours is the same rate across the board. And the only online channel that has cleaning fees is Airbnb and maybe VRBO. I don't know, but Airbnb definitely has the option that you can do that. But I do not add any cleaning fees onto my Airbnb site. When they go to Airbnb, they get the same price that they get on the other channels.
Do you make them mow the grass, clean the toilet?
No, I don't make anything. As a matter of fact, ours is probably closer to a hotel than any of the other Airbnbs, because a lot of them, you know, you get the kitchen with it and you can, you know, all of that. Yeah. Now I do have outdoor areas. I've got the fire pit and I've got the grill and all the tables and chairs, and we've got a little, you know, a little garden and all of that stuff that everyone can use. But in the house itself, when they come in through my parlor and go to their room, they're getting a room with two double beds and an ensuite bathroom and a coffee station inside the room. It looks almost identical to a hotel room.
That's cool.
And there's no cleaning fees. We don't ask them to do anything. They don't have to empty trash or strip beds or anything. Yeah, they don't do anything.
That I think that is, I don't know what that is. I guess it's maybe, I mean, I can only think that it's hosts that are not really empathetic to a traveler's needs or wants and desires, and like just maybe just trying to squeeze every penny out. Like, okay, well, if I have them change the trash, then I don't have to have the cleaning lady change the trash, and then maybe I'll save a couple bucks there. I don't know what it is, but it just seems, because I've had that before, because I stay in short-term rentals pretty frequently. And
yeah, I do too. And I've had that as well. And the problem with some of that is I don't mind taking my trash out. I get that because it makes the unit smell, especially if you've cooked a certain food that, you know, has an odor to it. I get that because, you know, you might leave at 7 a.m. to catch your flight and their cleaning crew doesn't come till 3. So I understand the trash, but I always have a problem with doing the first load of linen. I get if you just want me to throw it in, but if you want me to wait and put it in the dryer, well, what happens if I have a 5 a.m. flight?
Yeah.
You know, what time do I have to get out of bed to do a load of laundry before I get on my flight?
It's ridiculous. And half the time don't even find out about the cleaning list until after you've already booked it and committed, and it's like a real deal.
Well, and then it's posted on the refrigerator or something.
You know? And then it's on the fridge and it's like, lame.
I get it.
I mean, that said, so do you do all your cleaning or do you have somebody help you?
I do all of the daily flips here at the guest house, but I do have a gal that comes in a couple times a month and she deep cleans for me. She does like the fans and the baseboards and the windows and the stuff that I don't do between every guest.
Okay.
And so it is helpful.
What do you think is a reasonable price range for some kind of for assistance like that, where they're not doing every flip, but maybe or every room, but they are doing the deep clean like once or twice a month? What is that? What do you think is reasonable for that?
Well, I think anywhere from maybe $30 to $45 an hour is probably the going rate in my area. It just depends. If you're in, and again, now there is a difference between cleaning a house and cleaning an actual Airbnb guest house.
Yeah.
And the difference is this, if my gal is a cleaner, she's not a stager, but when you have a guest house or an Airbnb and you're putting it out there to the public, you almost have to have it staged.
Yeah.
You have to have the flowers on the center of the table and you have to have the rugs not crooked and you have to have the pillows poofed and all that stuff. And my gal is just a cleaner. And I don't have her stage the rooms for me. She just comes in and cleans. And then I go back in after her and poof the pillows and straighten up the, you know, the comforters on the beds and that sort of things, where she maybe pulled them up to vacuum underneath and they're not quite perfect. And I go back and try to make it look perfect before my guest arrives. So, but it's a needed service for me because she, you know, she does all the corners. She does all the high stuff and low stuff. And that way I can just go in and
do
keep the beds changed and empty the trash. And
you don't charge any cleaning fees for that. I do charge cleaning fees, but my cleaning fees just go directly to whoever the cleaner is. My management company arranges that. So that's pretty common there. And then, I mean, I imagine you don't have many problem guests, but if you did have a problem guest, how do you deal with that?
I had a fellow once that decided he was going to smoke in the room. And of course, we're a house with central air and central heat. Yeah. So once our furnace picked up the smoke, it just carried it throughout the whole house immediately. And so I did have to go knock on his door and said, no, you can't smoke in the house. You have to smoke outside. And his mom was involved in the booking. And so, because he was traveling back home from wherever he was, college or whatever, going home. And so the mom is the one that called. And so I called her and I didn't call her until he ignored me the first time and smoked again. And then that's when I called her, and I don't know if she boxed his ears over the phone or what, but shortly after that, he got in his car and left. Okay. And he didn't come back. So,
wow.
And she didn't ask for a refund, and I didn't offer.
Yeah.
Cause I had to air out the house.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, how disrespectful. Like, I mean, it is 2022. What if you're smoking anyway? It's like, come on, 1980 called and they need their thing back. But anyway, so
I do have a smoking area outside because there are folks that are smokers, and I do have a smoking area outside.
Yeah, yeah, and that's reasonable. So I know we're coming up on time. Kathy, what's like the best way for people to get in touch with you and learn more about Caraway Guest House and what you do?
The best way to get in touch with me is just kathybinner.com. Go to kathybinner.com. And if you're interested in taking a look at the guest house, it's under Caraway Guest House. And if you Google that, we're going to be on page one because I made sure.
Did you do some kind of SEO search engine optimization for that? Or did you just?
No, I just did my own research. I just started plugging in different names to see how many, pages there were under the same name. And so I just put in Caraway Guest House and it worked. And I decided to go with it.
Awesome. I'm putting all my contact information in the chat. So that's Adam Messmer. I'm at 614-595-3457 and Adam at lfglending.com. So if anybody needs any loans or wants to chat about beard grooming techniques or anything, I don't. That's the technique, is you just let it go, man. Cause it otherwise, I mean, what's the point? You gotta let go a little wild. Anyways, Kathy, this has been so much fun. Thanks as always for chatting. I love this. This is the best.
This has been the best. Yes, I love it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, hey, let's catch up soon.
Yes. Now, I know, Adam, you've got another commitment and have to go. Is there anyone in the audience that has any questions that you want to drop a question in the chat real quick? I'd be happy to answer it for you. And if we run out of time, I can still get in touch with me through kathybinner.com. Sure. If you're looking at property, if you have any questions on anything we've talked about, just go to kathybinner.com. There is a button all down the front page on how to schedule a call with me. And just schedule a call with me. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah.
I don't see any popping in there. I think we're good. Oh, here we are.
Oh, are there previous videos listed? Yes, there are.
KathyBinner.com. Scroll down to the ins and outs of opening a B&B, and all the replays are right there.
Yeah. Some of them are really good. Some of them.
Yeah. Yes. Each guest room is secured with a keyless entry. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's an easy way for that way I can change codes if I need to.
Cool. All righty. Well, hey, I got a jet. I got another call. But thank you so much. As always, this is always so much fun. I love chatting with you, Kathy.
It is fun. So thank you so much for the conversation. And again, anybody that wants to chat with me or you have any questions, kathybinner.com.
Cool. Thanks, guys. See you.
All right. Bye.